This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Yes, Pruitt and Trump and the EPA and all this stuff, Rick Perry, it's ridiculous. But a lot of the action has always taken place at the state level, at the city level. And we need to focus on that.
Compared with new buildings, older buildings tend to eat up a lot more energy and produce and trap a lot more pollution. Whether it's an old church, a broken down community center, an underfunded school building, or public housing, too often these older buildings don't get retrofitted due to fiscal constraints. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Donnell Baird, the founder and CEO of Block Power, a startup that uses technology to retrofit buildings in financially underserved communities. Not only does this work result in long-term energy savings and more humane conditions, Block Power offers these benefits at a much lower cost than was previously available. Baird explains Block Power's business model, tells us what inspired him to start the company, and talks about the challenges that the current political environment brings. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Donnell Baird. He's the founder and CEO of Block Power. Donnell, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
So explain in a nutshell what Block Power's model is.
We are trying to use cutting edge technology that is disrupting and innovating industries like Uber or Airbnb. We're trying to bring that cutting edge software and technology to the business of greening buildings in low and moderate income American communities. And so we're using software and hardware and connected devices and smart sensors and machine learning to help us green buildings at scale.
And give us an example of Block Power in action. How has it helped some of your clients?
Absolutely. So we're working with the mayor of the city of New York to green 500 to 1,000 buildings in Brooklyn and Queens. And these buildings are in low and moderate income communities across Brooklyn and Queens. Some of these neighborhoods are experiencing rapid gentrification. And we know that when we green a building, not only are we reducing the greenhouse gas emissions, but we're also reducing the energy cost and consumption of that building. And so we actually can increase the profitability of buildings, enabling some building owners to kind of maintain a property as affordable housing or with having reasonable rent for people that have been in the neighborhood for decades so that they don't have to move. Specifically, lots of our clients come to us. They need to replace their boiler that supplies heat into their heating system of their building. And these boilers, sometimes they burn filthy, oil that has a lot of particulate matter. Sometimes they burn clean oil for what that's worth. Sometimes they burn natural gas. In the best of situations, they are powered by solar panels, right? Solar hot water heating systems. And so we work with clients to properly size and replace their heating systems in order to ensure that they're operating at maximum energy efficiency, which generates savings to the client in terms of a reduced energy bill and reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
When you're saying clients in a boiler situation, would that be the homeowner themselves or would that be an intermediary?
Well, it depends on what kind of building. So a lot of our clients are churches or synagogues, right? Some of our clients are small businesses who own their building or lease their building. Could be nonprofits, community centers. Also, multifamily housing complexes. Those are a huge number of our clients where you have a property owner who owns a building that may have, 5 units or 10 units or 70 units. And they're trying to figure out how to manage this building to keep their tenants comfortable, to make sure that the building's profitable, to make sure that the air that's circulating throughout the building isn't causing, you know, super high rates of asthma attacks. And, you know, learning to figure out how to lower their operating costs where they can. And so any one of those building owners is a client. And so we work with them to figure out the way to make their building healthier, smarter, and greener.
And sticking to the boiler example, how would somebody have gotten this information before Block Power's technology? And maybe explain how, if you can kind of get into the weeds, how the application would actually give them the information without them being a super techie.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the problem is this industry is a mess, right? And for those of us who believe in climate change and don't think that it's a hoax invented by the Chinese, we have to solve the business problems associated with, you know, the nitty-gritty of like replacing a boiler or replacing a heating system or installing a high-efficiency HVAC unit. Because that is where a ton of greenhouse gas emissions come from. 68% of greenhouse gas in New York City comes from buildings, right? And so figuring out how to do the nitty-gritty of making those buildings greener and more efficient is incredibly important. So specifically with a boiler, for example, what people do now is they don't properly maintain the boiler because it's in the basement, it's gross, it's expensive, it's hard to understand. And basically when the boiler breaks or stops working, they call a local contractor, and the contractor comes over and says, it's, you know, probably going to cost me $200,000 to replace this boiler, and the law, local city building codes say that you have to provide a minimum heat to your tenants of 65 degrees. So in order to ensure that we can get your building up to 65 degree temperature, I'm going to put in a huge new boiler. Which, by the way, I'm going to charge you a ton of money for because it's bigger, and it's gonna take more work for me as a contractor to install it. So the contractor installs this huge boiler, which is going to overheat the building. He or she takes home a big fat paycheck, and the building owner is stuck with this large new boiler in the basement.
And the analysis of that can cost money as well, right? Just getting somebody to give
exactly.
you you don't get the free quote necessarily for something like this, correct?
Right. So the contractor walks in and they're going to get paid for installing a new boiler, right, to replace your old one. And a sophisticated building owner is actually going to hire an engineer to come in and analyze the building to figure out what the appropriate size of the replacement boiler should be. Or if you generally want to green your building to become more efficient, or you want solar panels, you need to have an engineer kind of visit your building and basically do a walkthrough of your building, catalog all of the equipment, and start to analyze the way that equipment is performing and how each individual piece of equipment's performance interacts with all the other equipments. Let me give you an example. Let's stay with the boiler, right? When your boiler comes on, starts to heat up water, it sends that hot water into pipes, which distribute that heat throughout your building. In some buildings in New York, there's a radiator or a set of baseboards that distribute heat into individual apartment units, mm-hmm. right? So you've got the production of heat at the boiler, you've got distribution through the pipes, you've got delivery of the heat into each apartment through a radiator or a baseboard, right? And then the building loses heat through the building envelope. So the walls, the roof, and the kind of construction material in the walls and the roof kind of dictate the rate at which heat is transferred from inside the building to inside the walls and then to outside the building, right? So the loss rate of the heat is incredibly important as well. So you got these four components of your heating system. And to green that building and to properly size the boiler and the heat system for that building, you need to hire a professional mechanical engineer who's going to come in and analyze the production, the distribution, the delivery, and the rate of loss of heat in that building and the physics of all of that energy production and transfer, right? And that's pretty expensive. And long and short of it, it can cost anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 just to perform that engineering analysis. And that engineering analysis tells you what you need to do in order to make your building more efficient. And most people, you know, don't have that kind of money to spend on an engineering analysis, which they then hand to a contractor who then says, okay, well, that's great. That tells you what size boiler you need for this building to replace your broken boiler, but I'm going to add $200,000 of labor costs onto it to actually install. So now you got a $300,000 boiler project. And that's just really hard for communities, low and moderate income communities, to figure out. So in effect, we're installing this huge fossil fuel guzzling heating system in all of our buildings instead of installing like hyper efficient technologies that reduce energy costs and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's the current state of the industry.
And so it's a kind of a Faustian bargain for a lower income building owner who's looking at either spending way too much to quote unquote do it the right way, or they end up doing it the wrong way, which can be very inefficient and expensive for everybody involved, including the planet.
That's right.
So Block Power is essentially kind of cutting out that initial engineering cost.
And to that point, let me add another layer of complexity, because now you got a $300,000 boiler replacement. You're a building owner in the middle of Detroit or in the middle of the Bronx. You got this $300,000 bill coming your way, and you may not have that cash on hand. If you don't turn the heat on, you're in violation of the law because you're not providing legally mandated heat to your tenants. It's actually hard to finance these boiler replacements as well, right? So if you're the building owner, you've got multiple challenges, and that the engineering's expensive, and it's hard for you to access financial services so that you can actually provide adequate heat to your building, right? If you need to replace the boiler. So you got those two problems. So what Block Power does is we think that the same way that mobile computing and big data are revolutionizing industry after industry across the American economy, that they should revolutionize the green buildings industry in low and moderate income communities. And so what we do is we show up, we install sensors, just like the sensors that sense touch and temperature inside your iPhone or Android. We buy these cheap sensors, we distribute them throughout the building, and we connect them through a local internet gateway that we install that's also pretty cheap. We put in a $50 credit card size computer into the boiler and into the basement where the boiler is located, and we start to collect data on temperature, pressure, humidity, and the way that heat is produced, transferred, and distributed throughout that building. By installing these sensors, we're able to perform the analysis using our software on the data that's being collected by the sensors. We can actually replace that engineering cost of $50,000 to $100,000, and you know, we can do it at, you know, $3,000 to $5,000, right? Perform that analysis that tells you what kind of hyper efficient boiler you could replace your broken boiler with that's going to save you money on your energy bill and also reduce carbon emissions. And so that is how we solve the engineering problem that causes a lot of trouble in the retrofit industry. And then because we have a ton of data on your building, and because we've lowered the cost of performing engineering analysis, for the same amount of money that you would spend on one building, we can now analyze 20 buildings. And because we're analyzing 20 buildings, now we have a portfolio of buildings that we can take to a Wall Street investment bank like Goldman Sachs or Deutsche Bank. And they have their set of internal incentives for providing capital to invest in these green building projects in low and moderate income communities at a pretty decent interest rate. I mean, they've, you know, offered us capital at 5.5%, which is a pretty good rate. So now we're able to provide engineering analysis and capital at a decent interest rate to green buildings projects in low and moderate income communities. Does that make sense?
It does.
Tell everyone. Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the founder and CEO of Block Power, Donnell Baird. If you'd like to hear more of this discussion, be sure to go to seachangeradio.com or download the podcast. So, Donnell, we spoke to a company in San Francisco that does some similar stuff to what you guys do in terms of technology, Acclima. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but your company is different in that you're really focusing on low to medium income clients. Explain how you ultimately will be able to make money when you're kind of offering a free service to clients who otherwise would be paying for engineering analyses.
Sure. Acclima does sensors to collect data on air quality, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're awesome. We share an investor with them, Eric and Wendy Schmidt. Eric Schmidt, chairman of Google. Wendy Schmidt, huge climate change, mission-aligned investor, is an investor in Acclima, is an investor in Block Power, and Acclima is a fantastic company. Really admire what they're doing. The way that we think that we can become a really big, profitable company is, or the reason is, and we learned this from our VCs, right, from our venture capital investors out in Silicon Valley. The feedback that we got from them is like, look, like what we as investors look for is a market opportunity where there isn't a whole lot of software. But if you think about building management in kind of old, poorly maintained, quote-unquote subprime buildings in Detroit or Brooklyn or the Bronx or, you know, West Philadelphia, in Baltimore, these are buildings that don't have a lot of software. But it also turns out that there's 5 million of these buildings in the U.S., and that there's 20 to 30 million of these buildings in India, for example, and most of them don't have software. So from an investment perspective, what we're trying to do is to bring cutting-edge technology and software to a huge $500 billion market where there's no current software and therefore no current competitors. And so the idea would be, how can we partner with our customers and clients to provide them a service while our software continues to gobble up more and more of the market? The data that's generated through all of these transactions and the kind of project fees that's generated at scale for a high volume of businesses would make Block Power a very, very profitable company. So we've grown at 200% growth rate for the last several years, which is, you know, similar to a growth rate that folks coming out of, you know, Y Combinator in Silicon Valley, that's the growth rate that they have as well.
And why don't you explain what inspired you to start the company?
Yeah, it actually goes way back. My parents were immigrants from Guyana in South America. Moved to Brooklyn in the 80s. We had to start over from scratch. We were in Bed-Stuy, which was a really, really terrible neighborhood at the time. Open air drug, you know, dealing. Saw multiple shootings. And it turns out that our building was hyper inefficient. So our boiler in Brooklyn and Bed-Stuy didn't work to heat our building. And so in order to have heat in the winter, we would heat up our apartment by turning on the oven and opening the oven door and letting that heat the apartment, and then kind of opening a window to release carbon monoxide. And so I had early experience with kind of building inefficiencies personally. When I graduated from Duke, I became a community organizer and learned that it wasn't just my family. I mean, it wasn't just my neighborhood. There were neighborhoods all over Brooklyn that were heating themselves this way. Or maybe the boiler's working, but it's overheating the building, and so you have to open up the window to release some of the excess heat. We saw that in the public housing complexes. After a few years of community organizing, I joined the Obama campaign. His community organizing mentor was my community organizing mentor, and I just thought it was the right move at that time. And worked for him and traveled to Cleveland and Milwaukee and Charlotte, Baltimore, and saw that these problems and patterns of, like, super inefficient, unhealthy, poorly managed buildings in inner cities, and inner city Cleveland looked the same as inner city Detroit, looked the same as inner city Brooklyn, right? And so I kind of traveled and saw these patterns of rundown or poorly managed buildings. And once Obama won the presidency, my assignment was the kind of green buildings portion of the stimulus. And so I partnered with some labor union pension funds and the Sierra Club and some other folks to take a look at how the Obama administration was investing stimulus dollars under Van Jones in the green buildings industry. And some of it worked, some of it didn't. The parts that didn't work, I thought we should solve. I thought, you know, from a climate, gas emissions perspective, and from a job creation in inner cities perspective, it was like worth trying to figure out the pieces of the green buildings part of the stimulus that did not work. How we could solve those problems so that we could create, you know, a million green buildings jobs and reduce greenhouse gas emissions from America by 10%. And so I went to Columbia Business School to learn about business, learn about finance, and while in business school was able to start Block Power. So that's where Block Power comes from.
So more specifically on what didn't work, we often hear the right looking at failed investments like Solyndra as an example of why we shouldn't be investing in clean energy initiatives. But now with a little more sober analysis and you're able to step back and see what did and what didn't work, explain why that straw man argument is silly and what we can learn from the investments that didn't work.
I mean, the very best venture capital investors, and for your listeners who aren't familiar with venture capital, I mean, basically they borrow money from pension funds and governments and universities and say that they're going to invest in early stage technology companies hoping to find the next Google or the next Facebook or the next Uber, right? And basically, if they, for every 10 investments that a really great venture capital makes, if they have two or three of them be really successful out of the 10, then they're like a legendary investor, right? Like they're the best of the best, right? And so that means that 7 out of 10 of those investments don't work. And I think it is really misleading when the right kind of makes this argument that like, look, the Obama administration, Solyndra, blah, 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 they gave all this money to Solyndra and it didn't work. Therefore, this was a failed program. The Obama administration gave, you know, invested in Tesla. Tesla's doing great. It's grown to like 50% market capitalization like this year. And there's a range of investments that the Obama administration made that are performing incredibly well. And those investments, as a matter of fact, have outperformed, I think it's something like 6 or 7 out of 10 investments that the Obama administration made are like doing really well, which is like a killer. I mean, that's a killer track record. And it's really surprising that the government was able to make these like really awesome investments. So just from a business perspective, it's just a ridiculous self-serving argument that the right is making about, oh, Solyndra failed and we shouldn't. It's ridiculous. America has the opportunity to kind of take charge and take a leadership position in clean energy globally. And we should do it. And if we don't do it, you know, we should understand that China is going to, you know, take that position if they can. From a climate perspective, either one works. But I think from an American job creation perspective, it's important that the government continue to play a role in investing in the clean energy economy. I mean, this is just a ridiculous argument from the Koch brothers about Solyndra that makes no business sense. It's just ridiculous on its face.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Donnell Baird from Block Power. How can a company like yours survive in this very hostile environment to clean energy initiatives? How can you stay politically active, work within what you believe is right and targeting customers who are in need, and still make a profit in the end of the day?
That's a really good question. I mean, at the end of the day, the states have to be the laboratories, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our blue states are going to have to really take a leadership position, and the governors of these blue states and the legislatures are going to have to take some political risks and make some commitments around making the kind of bets and taking the kinds of gambles that the Obama administration did. And they're going to have to do that on a state-by-state basis. California's going to have to do it. New York's going to have to do it. Massachusetts, everybody's got to do it. And I do think that we as a climate movement, we need to take time to process our grief around what's happening with Trump and the EPA. But we also need to get our act together and focus on our state governments in blue states and encouraging them to allocate the kind of capital that is necessary to innovative technology solutions that are going to give us a shot at bending the greenhouse gas emissions curve. And we really have to get focused on, yes, Pruitt and Trump and the EPA and all of this stuff, Rick Perry, it's ridiculous. But a lot of the action has always taken place at the state level, at the city level. And we need to focus on that. I just joined the board of the Sierra Club Foundation. I'm incredibly proud to be a part of that community. They do amazing things at the Sierra Club. In particular, there's an amazing organizer named Jody Van Horn who's leading a national effort to get mayors of U.S. cities to publicly commit to reducing greenhouse gas in their city by 100%. It's called Ready for 100. It's an amazing campaign. Mayor of Atlanta, where I went to high school, recently made a commitment. City of Atlanta, busiest airport in the world, 100% renewable energy by 2035. Every building, the entire city, 100% renewable energy by 2035. And the truth is, he and all the other mayors that are making these kinds of commitment, he needs our help, he needs our capital, he needs us to invest in companies who can help him get to 100% renewable energy. He needs implementation plans, he needs help with his data. In every city, in every state that's making these kinds of commitments, it's hard enough to make the commitment, but as we learned during the Obama stimulus, the implementation is 10 times harder. And so the question is, what are the ways that we can use all of the tools from Silicon Valley to help solve the implementation problems that we as progressive leaders in blue cities and blue states are going to use to kind of experiment on what a clean energy economy is going to look like. And the thing that's painful about that, man, is that I think sometimes as like progressives, I definitely feel this way internally, like there's an aversion to wanting to get involved in the private sector, in capital markets, in technology, in Silicon Valley. But I do think that intersection of our values, the opportunity in blue states and blue cities, and the kind of cutting-edge technology that enables an Uber, right? The mix of like GPS and smartphone computing and sensors and all that stuff, if we can apply it to solve the problems of climate change and climate change mitigation, that's where we need to be partnering and that's where we need to focus. So I think there's a huge opportunity for companies like Block Power to work with these mayors and governors who are making these clean energy commitments. And I hope that the energy from climate change progressives can focus on being supportive of that. We're going to have to do this ourselves, right? Like, we're going to have to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as Americans ourselves. Like, no one is coming to save us.
The company is Block Power, and the founder is Donnell Baird. Donnell, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by the Grey Boy All-Stars and Jimmy Reed. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.